5, please. Gonzalez versus Rangel.
No, U.S. versus Gonzalez Rangel.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Alan Krasminski. I represent the defendant appellant in this case, Miguel Gonzalez-Rangel. Your honors, there are three primary issues in this case, three issues. The primary one being the issue of how the district court determined Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel's relevant conduct at the time of the sentencing in this case. Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel entered a guilty plea, or entered guilty pleas rather, without the benefit of a plea agreement. He was one of several defendants in a multi-defendant drug conspiracy case. However, there was a disagreement with respect to the extent of Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel's participation in the drug dealing that was engaged in by what was usually referred to as the Lopez family. And as a result, he accepted responsibility by entering guilty pleas, and we went to sentencing with the issue of the extent of his drug dealing, if you will, being the primary issue. The other issues had to do with the possession of a firearm that he was found in his vehicle shortly before his arrest on the indictment in this case, and also then whether he was entitled to acceptance of responsibility given the fact that he had pled guilty. At the time of sentencing, the government relied upon the recitation of statements given by co-defendants and informants, and actually relied principally on one cooperating co-defendant, Ernesto Lopez.
But weren't there 11 other people that testified that corroborated him? I mean, that to me is your big problem. This isn't a situation like that. I think the case you cited, the Palmer case, where there was one person that testified as to 100 times the amount of drugs that the person had pled to. Here we had 11 people that corroborated the extent of the sales, the time period of the sales. How do you get around that?
Well, I think, with all due respect, I don't think the other defendants and informants were all in line or all corroborated what Ernesto Lopez allegedly accused my client of doing. Namely, almost with one exception, Mr. Ernesto Lopez was the only one who had a very specific figure of 40 to 50 kilograms of cocaine in addition to some marijuana going back to like 1996. All the other individuals either gave statements consistent with what my client said, namely his involvement began in 1998 and continued up until December of 1999, and did not attribute any specific quantities to him, at least overall. I think there was one other individual cited in the pre-sentence report that I think attributed a total of 8 kilograms to Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel. So Ernesto Lopez alone was the person who came up with this number of 40 to 50 kilograms. And leaving aside his estimation that supposedly covered as many as 4 years, the quantity attributed to Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel would not have been anywhere near what the quantity that the district court adopted.
Right, but then some of these other people, I agree, didn't say the specific amounts, and obviously they didn't witness this up to 40 keys, but they were testifying saying that they, you know, bought a certain quantity on a regular basis from him. I mean, it's not, you know, corroboration where they saw the actual amount, but they certainly corroborated the fact that that he was dealing drugs and on a regular basis, and then certainly the quantity that they purchased. Isn't that right?
That is correct, Judge. And obviously it's a relatively narrow issue in that the starting point was at least 5 kilograms based on the fact that Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel had pled to the conspiracy count. And so the only real question was the upper limit. And I'm just suggesting that given the fact that Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel, pursuant to a proffer letter, had admitted to, in his estimation or his recollection, approximately 10 kilograms, as well as some marijuana, that there wasn't sufficient evidence, reliable evidence, to allow the district court to adopt, without any live testimony, without any grand jury testimony, without any sworn affidavits of any kind, to, in effect, establish why it is Mr. Ernesto should be believed. I know the district court put the ball in my court and wanted to know, well, why can't, why, what do I have to challenge? Why it is Mr. Ernesto Lopez shouldn't be believed? Well, the only thing I had, since he wasn't present, was that he was a cooperating individual with the government. He had pled guilty. And obviously, he had everything to gain by pointing the finger not only at Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel, but everyone else in the case, which he did.
And you didn't request, I realize, you don't have to, but you didn't request that the government produce this witness.
I did not.
And did you object to the fact that all of this was hearsay testimony?
I did object in advance of the sentencing hearing, that is specifically raising the issue of reliability based on the role Mr. Ernesto Lopez had played and obviously the motivation he might have had in coming up with a quantity that was obviously favorable to the government and disfavorable to Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel. I know the district court seemed to want me to prove where, why it is it wasn't true, and I did try and present evidence of Mr. Gonzalez-Rangel's work history. He spent 9 years at Milwaukee Valve. Someone from Milwaukee Valve voluntarily appeared at sentencing to talk about what an outstanding employee he had been.
But what's that got to do with the amount of drugs?
Well, indirectly, as I tried to convince
the
court.
Indirectly.
Well, without being able to account for
the side door when you should come through the front.
Sorry?
It's like entering through the side door when you should come through the front.
Well, other than offering Mr. Gonzalez, Rangel's own statement, there was a limit to how much we could reconstruct over what.
I agree with you.
but we did have the employment history, the fact that he was married and had three small children and had a small home on the south side. His brothers testified. He had filed tax returns. He certainly didn't fit, I think, the profile of a major supplier to this family, which...
You're in your rebuttal time.
I know. Which had clearly had multiple other suppliers. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michelle Jacobs. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Milwaukee, and I represent the government here today. I think the crux of really all three of the defendant's arguments, but certainly the argument regarding drug weight and relevant conduct that the defendant has made in his brief and here this morning, comes down to the district court's assessment of the credibility of the information that was presented both in the pre-sentence report, and also the witnesses that the defendant presented in the witness's own statement. There were different views of the evidence, pretty clearly. On the gun issue, the defendant had a very different take on what had happened that night. And on the drug weight, the defendant, as Mr. Krasinski said, at least acknowledged up to 5 kilos in his change of plea to the offense, to the conspiracy offense. His counsel also indicated at pages 28 and 29 of the change of plea transcript that it was likely that they really agreed to the 15 to 50 kilo range. It was really whether or not there was anything that would take him over that 50 kilogram range. Now, the district court made sufficient credibility findings. Throughout the sentencing transcript, he referred to his duty to view with skepticism the information of certain witnesses like Ernesto Lopez, but also that it was corroborated, that the information, Judge Williams, as you pointed out, was internally consistent between witnesses, that the information that the government had presented was essentially unrefuted.
But no witness was actually called for the hearing.
That's true.
So the court made those credibility determinations just on the report?
Well, no, I don't think so. For example, the district court obviously took the changes of plea of a number of the witnesses, including Ernesto Lopez, Hector Lopez, Luis Acevedo, Esteban Alvarado. So the district court had seen all of these witnesses firsthand. I'm sure this court is aware of the extensive nature of Judge Covert's changes of plea. He questions these defendants at length, both about their own conduct, their motivations for entering pleas, and so forth. So he was very familiar with the entire case and with a lot of the witnesses whose information was presented in the pre-sentence report. This court's case law, though, also indicates that the defendant has to do something more than simply deny the credibility or deny the accuracy of information in a pre-sentence report if the district court is going to rely on that. There are lots of decisions, but the one that I can think of most recently was one this summer, I think called Willis, but there are lots of them that indicate the defendant has to do something more than that. And really, that's all that was done here, both on appeal and really before the district court. And while he says the government didn't present Ernesto Lopez in terms of live testimony, as he indicated, he did not make a request that Mr. Ernesto Lopez or any of the other witnesses whose information was presented in the pre-sentence report be called as witnesses, either by the government or so that he could at least have an opportunity to cross-examine the information presented. Because Judge Clover had, I think Judge Williams, you said 11 witnesses, and I didn't count them as I listed them here, but more than a handful of witnesses upon which to make these findings. The findings or the information was internally consistent and corroborated. I would ask that this court affirm Judge Clibbert's findings as not clearly erroneous, both as to drug weight, the gun enhancement, and acceptance of responsibility.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Just briefly on the issue of reliability, I don't recall that the district court ever specifically said why it is the court felt Mr. Ernesto Lopez was somehow inherently reliable or reliable based on the statements. The only statements that we saw were in the pre-sentence report. And given that the government has the burden of proof at a sentencing hearing to establish the drug quantity, I don't think it's unreasonable to expect them to be able to meet their burden of proof other than by just including statements from people who have every motive to tell the government what it wants to hear in a pre-sentence report.
They're entitled to present hearsay evidence.
Sorry?
They're entitled to present hearsay
evidence. They are, Judge. But given that they were on notice that...
Well, they're going to present hearsay evidence, and a natural corollary is the judge is entitled to take hearsay evidence in consideration unless somebody attacks it.
I realize that, but given the huge difference between what Gonzalez Rangel said he was guilty of and what Mr. Ernesto Lopez almost alone was attributing to him, I mean, there was a pretty substantial difference.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, difference between two major categories. I think it was incumbent upon the government to at least produce some reliable information other than just statements that were given to the pre-sentence author. The other issue that I raised and that I'd like to spend just 5 seconds on has to do with the district court's denial of acceptance of responsibility. Obviously, Mr. Gonzalez Rangel entered guilty pleas, which normally would entitle him. The only dispute was, again, over the quantity, the upper limit of the quantity of the drugs that he was involved with. He didn't dispute his involvement, and it seems to me if you adopt the district court's reasoning, then you can't have anyone ever challenge any significant issue at the time of sentencing. And the same thing with the issue of the possession of the firearm. Mm-hmm. He gave a statement when he was arrested. He repeated the same thing at the time of sentencing. And while the district court felt it was not believable, I don't know that on the face of it, it was so implausible. There's nothing to indicate that he was ever involved in any violent offenses or activities. Yes, he explained why he purchased the weapon because it related to the tavern that he began to operate. And while there were drugs found in the car, and this happened while he was supposedly participating in the conspiracy, that alone would seem to make him guilty. But it seems to me we shouldn't be penalized for raising that, and if we aren't assured of any victory. So for the reasons I would hope the court would remand this case for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.